Hello and welcome to episode number 364 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
We are back with our final show of September before we move into a packed October lineup, which is obviously going to be kicking things off next week with a big one. We'll get to, I guess, at the end of the show, get one final temperature check before going into it. Very exciting indeed. We've got a very interesting movie to talk about this week, actually, in No One Will Save You, which I don't even know if we've ever even spoke about this one on the podcast before.
Just, from nowhere to reviewing it.
Yeah, it's always great. I love it. It's my preferred for these sort of on-demand films. A little bit of news this week, a couple of interesting things. This first one's cool. So this is a new movie. I believe it's just got announced, courtesy of Deadline, but it's coming super soon. So it's a movie called It's a Wonderful Knife. And this is a upcoming... Yes, that is a pun indeed. And it's an upcoming Christmas slasher. That's just been acquired by Shudder. Apparently this is getting a sort of limited theatrical release in the States in November, and it says it's coming to Shudder at a later date, but you would presume that's in December, hopefully. And it's kind of getting its first premiere at a festival in October. But also, it's worth noting that this is from one of the writers, or I believe just the writer of Freaky, and the director, Tyler McIntyre, who directed Tragedy Girls as a feature. He also did the Good Boy segment in Into the Dark, which was fantastic. And he also did a segment in, I think it was VHS 99, called the Gawkers. It was like the teens that are like stalking this girl, this like neighbor. That was a really fun one. So he's obviously doing a feature for the first time, and we've liked all of the stuff he's done. It's kind of like the write-up says it's been described as It's a Wonderful Life meets Scream, which is hilarious, obviously, with the title. There is an interesting element in this plot. So it says that it's kind of a year after saving her town from a psychotic killer on Christmas Eve, Winnie Carruthers' life is less than wonderful. But when she wishes she'd never been born, she finds herself in a nightmare parallel universe and discovers that without her, things could have been much, much worse. Now the killer is back, and she must team up with the town misfit to identify the killer and get back to her own reality. So I love that. It's such a cool spin on a lot of Christmas tales, with a horror thing, and obviously it's the parallel universe stuff that's very in trend right now.
It's very Christmas Carol, isn't it? Just looking from the outside in at what if, and the fact that we've got people connected to Happy Death Day makes a lot of sense as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Justin Long's on the cast for this one as well. I think he's only in a sort of supporting role, but he's just picked such good genre stuff. But yeah, a lot of fun. Hopefully this will be one we get to see on Shudder this year. Next up, this is just a small one that we don't really have to talk too much about because it's a movie that we've already discussed. In Smile, obviously, was a huge hit last year. Immediately got greenlit a sequel, and the director, actually Parker Finn, who kind of did a short film called Laura Hasn't Slept, which is what it then became, he adapted into Smile. He signed like a big multi-year first look deal with Paramount in the wake of Smile. Yeah, they're obviously making sure he does the sequel first because we now have a date, and it will be out in October next year. A 2-year turnaround on this one. It'd be interesting to see. Like, we both enjoyed Smile quite a bit. Ooh. I would say it was certainly better than I was expecting, and has definitely franchise potential.
I think that's the thing about Smile for me is that I think I enjoyed Smile, but I actually think it has the potential. There's a better movie there. Definitely, that could be made. I think it's a really cool concept, can be really freaky, can be used in a lot of different ways, and I do think that actually we could get an improvement.
Fingers crossed. Like I say, it's always difficult because you don't know if it's just going to be like, oh, it's a cash grab and it's a relatively quick turnaround. There was enough there that I would 100% be down for a sequel. And like I say, hope for the best and hope that they can improve upon a very good foundation. We'll be seeing that one next year. And then lastly, this is just a small fun one I saw today. There's a new book that's kind of, it got announced today and released. So it's available now.
Did you say book?
Yes, book.
I don't understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's these things you read.
Video game.
No. certainly not our preferred entertainment avenue, but this is not a novel, because it's called House of Rejects. Maybe you can already work out what this is going to be about. but it's an in-depth look at Rob Zombie's Firefly trilogy. So this author, Dustin McNeil, has done similar books on, I believe, the Chucky franchise as well, which I only saw today and looks very cool. But yeah, it's a kind of described as this exhausting new exploration, taking you on behind the scenes of all three of the films. It apparently has different interviews with people that worked on the films, as well as like behind the scenes, you know, rare set photos and scripts and all different things. Just like a fun, comprehensive book, basically, of all of the good stuff of these wonderful films.
I'm not going to lie, joking about books beforehand, but I really like this as a concept. Obviously. Yeah. The second you bring Rob Zombie in, I'm like, oh, go on. But, you know, even the Child's Play one, but the idea of this behind the scenes and a different look at a movie in the medium of a book, because I think sometimes, like, you know, I've often had making of or featurettes and special features on DVDs and stuff that just are a bit disappointing. That just are a bit like samey and don't really feel like it. And the things that are probably the best thing is like a director's commentary when they are just talking at length about the little minutiae in things. And I kind of feel like a making of book will be able to do that and tell the stories and everything else and not just be like, no, look, here's a little 5-minute video of Batman eating a bagel, isn't that funny, and just shove it on the Blu-ray, you know. And it's just like, that's not really what I want, you know. I wanted something with a bit more meat on the bones. Yeah, I like this as a concept. I don't know whether I'll be checking it out, but I'd like to, definitely.
Yeah, it looks cool. Like, I was checking out, there's a small little trailer that kind of goes over it as well and shows you what's inside, and they kind of sold me on it. Like I say, it's on Amazon already. I think it's about £20. I think I'm probably going to get it. Like, I love buying books that I never read.
You have a collection of books you don't read, so
yeah,
why not?
It's great. It can go, you know, like, I finish about one every 2 to 3 years at this point. Like, I'm great. I'm very prolific with my book reading. But yeah, this is clearly not like a big, you know, difficult thing to manage. Like, I'm sure it'd be a lot of it would be flicking through and just looking at things and reading certain, you know, articles in it. But yeah, it's cool to just have that, like, say, of just a comprehensive, like, say, for super fans like us, I think it's perfect. So anything new like Rob Zombie, I'm always on the radar for. Like, it's the 20th anniversary, obviously, of House, and so there's been like small mini releases and stuff in the US, and yeah, like, I would love to see, you know, just more of these great films be celebrated. So yeah, very, very cool one. But yeah, that's it for the news this week. Shall we talk about this week's film?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about No One Will Save You. So yeah, like we said at the start, really, this one pretty much came out of nowhere, I guess. And came out in the last week, which is exceptional, because yeah, we needed a week before the big one next week.
There's literally nothing on at the cinema right now. There are no horror movies at the cinema right now
that we want to see. So yeah, we needed something, and this is kind of very similar to the other kind of, so this is a Hulu original in the States, as part of the, is it 20th Century? Yeah, they were one of the production companies. So similar to Barbarian, Prey, Fresh, where it's like on Hulu in the States, but obviously as part of that, we get it on Disney Plus in the UK. So yeah, this is on the service in the UK right now, which is cool, because like I say, there's Prey is the only one that didn't land for us, and for everyone else it did. But then those other movies are all really good. So I've kind of gravitated towards these more than a lot of other on-demand films recently, where I'm like, man, they really, even something like Prey, like, I'm glad I saw it, and it was certainly worth the conversation. Yeah. So I think they've been really interesting. Like I say, like, a lot of those films, pretty much all of them, should have had cinema releases. Mm. And for whatever reason, I think it is with obviously 20th Century being bought out, no longer being under the Fox banner, and obviously being like Disney needing stuff on their services. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So that's how we get to this film. And it's a very interesting one. Like, there's a couple of things about it, you know, that stand out as being very unique, which we'll get to. But yeah, do you want to just start with the plot, I guess? That seems to be a good jumping off point.
Yeah, definitely. The thing I found interesting about this as well was watching the trailer post watching the movie.
Oh, I've not seen it.
Yeah, so the trailer very much leans in on this being a home invasion movie.
Right.
But it all is not what it seems. Mm. And it's like, yeah, the trailer is something like, there are so many home invasion movies, home invasions every year in America. This one's different.
Right.
And kind of that's the starting point for the trailer. And I think the trailer does keep it shrouded a bit more in mystery. Mm. But actually, like, I mean, you know, you effectively get, you know, what, 5 or 10 minutes into this movie and you know exactly what it's about, really.
Yeah, like the posters, if you've seen them, the posters aren't hiding that fact at all.
no, true. And I think that's the thing. And yeah, we're basically our lead, Bryn, played by Caitlin Dever, who is a name I want to mention straight off the bat because I think she's fantastic in this and, you know, is definitely a name I'll be looking out for in the future. She stars as Bryn, who is this kind of exiled kind of loner who is very kind of anxiety ridden, that is just living in this farmhouse, like in the middle of nowhere, kind of on her own. And you talk about this, the movie having a couple of kind of important things to talk about. One of which is how little words are spoken throughout this whole movie. I think the word count is 8 in the entire movie, and we get over an hour into the movie until we get a clear word spoken by someone.
Yeah.
And I did see a little bit where the director spoke about how this is written and directed by Brian Duffield. How he spoke about how that wasn't intentional at the start. It was kind of organic, and it does make a lot of sense because, you know, Bryn is just on her own, and so why would she be talking, you know? And she's making noises and reacting to things, but she's not just having a conversation with herself. And as the movie goes on, yeah, we see that she's kind of an outsider from town, and there's this weird kind of town where it's kind of, it looks like she is trying to make an effort with them, and she's doing this fake smile and wave, but then doesn't do it. And the town looks like they're kind of looking at her, but not wanting to be involved with her. And yeah, we get to the first kind of night of this movie, what, about 10 or 15 minutes in, I guess?
Yeah, it's pretty early.
Yeah, maybe even earlier than that. And basically, yeah, she gets invaded, and very quickly we see that this is an alien life form that is in her house, and in a very scary scene. Because for me, like, when I first saw this movie and saw the rating, I was a bit put off. I kind of thought to myself, man, this is going to be like a really soft, like Signs or something, where it's just kind of very, very soft and going to have,
hey, Signs is scary as hell.
yeah, I was thinking that when I was in saying it. There is that bloody one moment, isn't it, that's terrifying.
Yeah,
there's a like couple, Signs, but there's the one.
It's interesting
that has, like,
you evoked Signs, because that was a movie that I was thinking about a lot watching this. Where I was like, oh yeah, it is soft, like on the surface, but like they get so much from so little. Like I say, the actual scenes of tension land massively.
Yeah, and so I found the first home invasion scene very kind of unsettling and ticking all the home invasion boxes for me, where she's kind of, she clearly sees that someone's in her house instantly, which I love, because so often in horror movies you get this kind of tease that is someone there or isn't someone there, and ultimately you're watching a horror movie, so you know someone's going to be there eventually.
Yeah.
And I love that, like, instantly it's like, no, there's fucking someone in your house. And then it's like, oh, is it an alien? And within like 2 minutes, it's like, oh yeah, it's clearly a fucking alien that's in your house.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't pull the punches on that, but like, it straight away tells you that there's an alien there, and then it straight up shows you the alien, you know? So within like, you know, the first few minutes post the invasion, we full screen see our creature for this movie. And I think, that as well is kind of like a different take that we so infrequently get. You know, how often would it be that she'd been attacked multiple times, but we as the viewer haven't actually seen what's attacked her?
We
basically post this first night of being invaded by this alien, we then kind of follow kind of Bryn trying to escape, get help, realize that this is bigger than she first thought, and continuing to fight on her own, mostly this alien invasion into her life. That is kind of, you know, the rest of the movie. And like I said, I think it sets it up very quickly, and then it doesn't pull the punches, and it keeps going, which I think is the, like I say, it's such a fresh, you know, take on the opposite that happens in most movies that you end up watching.
Yeah, well, it gets going super quick. Like you say, it doesn't let off, and it doesn't overstay its welcome, because, you know, this is the rare film which is under 90 minutes before the start of the credits. And like, as we keep saying, that difference between that and 110 minutes can really make such a difference. You know, like, had they added an extra 20 minutes in the finale of fluff, would have really slowed things down, because there's only one point towards the end when it does slow down slightly.
Genuinely thought there, did we see a movie called Fluff?
At this point, probably.
I was like, I don't remember Fluff. I remember Fresh, but Fluff.
We're not going to remember, are we? But yeah.
I don't remember having 30 minutes of Fluff filler at the end.
I have no idea what my point was.
No, you were saying that it slowed down a little bit, and it did, you know, when we got kind of, you know, before the finale, that kind of getting kind of back to the house sort of scene was, you know, starting to slow down.
Yeah, because there's only really, like, this is such just a thrill ride, and it's not focused on story or plot or character. And there's, like, one thing, basically, of, like, right, why is she an outcast? And we obviously get a lot of setup in that sort of first 10 minutes. We see her, like, write in a letter to someone called Maud. We obviously see, like, people in the town reacting negatively to her. She even, like, writes the letter saying something like, I'll never forgive myself for what happened or something. So you're very much like, okay, there was an incident, and that's all.
She's writing to her mum as well.
So you know something happened. And it's very much left then for the rest of the film until one point when they just info dump everything. And it's like, yep, here's the reveal of all these things. That to me was the only time that it started to even remotely slow down. And I wouldn't even necessarily say it was slow. It was just in comparison to what the rest of this entire film is.
Yeah.
Which is basically just a series of insane cat and mouse chases. Similar to something that we saw in Sick earlier this year, that was just kind of like the no frill slasher. I feel like this takes it to like a completely different level, where it is just one singular character in Bryn, just against all odds in almost every scene that she's in. And they somehow make that work, because it would feel ludicrous most of the time to have just this small person on their own overcoming these odds. But like, to me, in each scenario in which she was able to continue throughout the film, it worked and made like visual sense. It made narrative sense. The fact that they were constantly finding new and interesting ways for her to use her environment, her surroundings, what she has available to her in interesting ways was always so interesting to me. Ooh. Like the fact that, again, a lot of, I mean, it's so funny that we literally just saw The Blackening last week where we joked about how they were like, oh yeah, they knew how to do a crossbow kill. So that was the only threat in the whole film. And it was the only kill we saw, was just, if someone's getting an arrow in the neck, it's going to look great. And other than that, you're not going to see anything. And this is like the opposite of like the amount of tension, the amount of threat of violence and actual violence that happens due to so many different things. Like this movie goes in so many random and bizarre places. From where it starts, which is a very, like I say, it starts in this home invasion that is done in a classic style of a home invasion, you know, where she's asleep at night, she hears a noise, boom, she's up. Oh, she puts her slippers on. Oh, you know, it's the garbage cans. It's going to be an animal, or the wind's knocked it over. Okay, it's cool. It's, you know, just a normal sound to wake our character up. So immediately she sees someone downstairs.
I love.
Yeah, and like this reveal was sick because it's kind of like through this warped glass window, so it kind of gives it this weird, you know, and extraterrestrial vibe. But it could have just been like a person that looked a bit warped in the glass. And it, like, say that what an other film would do of lesser quality would be dragging out scenes like that. They would want you to constantly not know, is it humans, is it aliens, is it real, is it fake, is it all in her head. They would constantly want to try and trick you into, and then it would be the last 20 minutes of the film would be what this first 20 minutes was, which was, nope, we're going to show you exactly what it is. It's going to be full screen in all glory and you'll see it. And you'll have like a really sick confrontation. Like I couldn't believe the first confrontation she had with an alien and kind of how sick it looked and how satisfyingly it concluded, where I was like, man, that felt like the end to most films. And
It did. Like you've had an hour and 10 minutes of them teasing the creature in shadows, and especially when we got the opening scene and there was a crop circle the first morning, and like we're just going to have multiple day night sequels where there's more crop circles and everything else, and then this was the finale. And when we got to that point, like 20 minutes into the movie, I was like, what the fuck's going to happen for the next hour and 10?
Like we keep saying that, where we'll just be like 70 minutes of tease and build up, and it will just be shadows and characters walking around at night in the dark doing literally nothing. And like, we've seen that so much. And so to see this, which was a complete jolt to the system, where I was so ready for it to be that. And when it wasn't, it was like, holy shit, like we got ourselves a film here. Like when it actually starts and they show you stuff and you know, you have that confrontation go down the way it does. And then immediately it's like, okay, like where do we go from here? Like we've got a vast majority of the film left to go. I mean, I'm being super like, you know, trying to avoid spoilers, but it really is like the first 15, 20 minutes. Like I almost just want to say it because it really does set up what the rest of the film is. So I guess like very mild spoilers for like, what the first 20 minutes, but like she kills the alien. And this is sensational to me because again, I didn't see it coming. It's so awesome the way it happens and transpires. Like say this cat and mouse instance, and the fact that it just ends so abruptly, and then, like I say, you've then got the rest of the film to look forward to, and we see scenes that we wouldn't normally see, like her waking up and then being like, right, okay, now I need help, but I'm in a place where no one wants to help me. And the way that transpired, there's just so many phenomenal scenes where it really, from like her waking up at night, to be fair, from the moment the movie started, really, up until like this big kind of character info dump, which we'll get to, and I don't even think it's remotely bad either, it's just not as strong as the rest of the film. Like this entire chunk of back and forth scenarios I just thought was so awesome. Like it was a complete thrill ride that had me on the edge of my seat, and I was loving each scenario. And the fact that they kept throwing new stuff at us, you know, you see the aliens early on, and I love the way they look visually. Like, I love a movie that's not afraid to go for a more classic film look of an alien. You know, like, I feel like a lot of films recently have shied away from that. and they try and do their own take, and it becomes almost boring, because unless you've got some banging creature design, it's not going to look that interesting to me. Like, more often than not, I typically don't like the way aliens look in alien films, and so to see this be a more classic look, but then there's slight variants on it, which I won't get into, but the fact that there is multiple slight variants keeps you so interested. Like, yeah, like the fact that each one had its own small little difference, just like yeah, but that's exactly, it was like this, and again, that's something that you would get that in the sequels to this film, in a lesser film, you know, you would get, like, again, I don't even want to spoil it, but like the variants. Yeah, like the variants that you get, like the one that she, the couple that she fights sort of midway and towards the end, are so insane. Where I'm like, my mouth was just in awe watching it. Like, the first time one of them is revealed behind her later on, and it's kind of got this like night setting, and you see like the house and you see this alien, I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. So yeah, I've kind of spoke a lot, and there's already so much to get to, but like overall, God, I absolutely loved this film. I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I think one thing is that I agree with you that, like, with the aliens, I like that they did a conventional look initially for them. You know, it's the whole argument that I've had with like dinosaurs.
Yeah,
like, you know, we know what movie dinosaurs look like.
Oh, here we go again.
And it's like with aliens, it's like, yeah, just give us like a, you know, I know that's an alien. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's what the conventional thing is, you know, and it's just like, that's fine, you know. And but I was like, I wasn't blown away with the visual effects for when it was kind of first shown. Where I was surprised by how ropey it looked at times, and especially when I saw the budget of this movie and was like, Jesus Christ, like, and the company was involved. But when we got later into it and we got the different variants, and when it was more, I think it's probably more that I'm just not used to seeing it just fully lit in my face.
Yeah.
And that's probably what it is. And then when we got later into the movie and it was kind of, the creatures almost went back into the shadows, and they looked better. But yeah, all in all, I was sold from the start. You know, I wasn't fully aware of like the complete lack of dialogue and like all of that stuff. And like, just as the movie starts and we get like this good soundtrack initially, and we get her kind of just moseying about writing these letters and having this mystery around what's going on. And the first time she goes into town, and I knew there was like an alien vibe, and instantly I was like, well, either she's an alien or the whole town's an alien.
Yeah. It's so good.
I was just constantly had these different things in my head, like these different scenarios. And then we just get to this home invasion, which feels like a finale. And then it doesn't let up, and I enjoy the fact that like she has this thing happen to her, and then she thinks, screw it, I'm gonna have to go to town, and I'm gonna have to engage with the people that don't want to engage with me and try to get help, and instantly realizes I'm screwed, like I gotta get out of this town because I can't get help here. And you know, I think so many times we talk in horror movies about how people conveniently just forget they have a car or a phone, you know, and it's like, well, no, she is isolated in this small town for a reason, and I really respect that.
Yeah.
When we do get her then just in daylight as well, and it's like, oh, okay, so she's going to mess around, and then she's going to have to go back to her house in the evening, and she's going to board up, and then we're going to have another day-night cycle. And it was like, the movie's like, nope, we're not going to do that. We're going to do something different, and we're going to keep it in the day as long as we can, but still have, you know, scary things happen. And I think that's the thing that, like, shocked me the most, was the amount of tension throughout this whole movie. You know, I think you touched upon it, that there were just multiple really good cat-mouse sequences that were very tense. And, you know, I enjoyed those. I enjoyed the fact that at times our character just got the fuck out. She just legged it. And like, I like that in a movie where you do just get like, you know, if I just had a load of mad shit happening, I'm just like, I'm just going to leg it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I like that as a reasonable way to get out of a situation.
Yeah, like, yeah, what's into the truck driver in Texas Chainsaw Massacre? Like, it's an effective strategy. Yeah. Like, just run in a straight line.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, screw this. There's a dude with a chainsaw running at me. I'm just going to be quicker than him.
Mm.
Like, you know, I don't need to outsmart him. I'm just going to run. So, yeah, I enjoyed all of that. And then, you know, leading into the finale, like, it definitely had the change of pace. But I think what it ended up doing for me was really resonating the ending. And really, like, I'm not going to spoil the ending, but when we got into the final images of the movie, I was really on board, really, just enjoying the you know, I'm trying not to spoil anything, but just enjoying the final kind of message and images that they were giving me. And I think that kind of setup and that info dump of what her history was and then how that affected the final kind of scenes just really landed with me. And I think we will need to get into a spoiler talk because I do want to talk about how much I enjoyed the ending. And I think like this is a movie that I would definitely say has the intention of having an open ending. But for me, I felt very satisfied and just had a very satisfied bow in my own head as to what this was and what the meaning was. And yeah, when it ended, I was just like, man, I had a really great time. I had a suspenseful, you know, hour and 10 minutes. I had a really cool, satisfying ending. And it was just from a movie that didn't exist last week in my mind, suddenly being like proper thought about it after the credits rolled, you know, which is the thing that's happened the most frequently this year, is that I watch a movie and then I sit down to do the podcast and I'm like, Christ, what are my thoughts on this movie? I haven't, it's left my brain the second I watched it. Whereas this one didn't.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that this 100% feels like the first Fright Fest movie that we've seen this year. this to me just absolutely feels like a movie that it's a way bigger budget than that.
Yeah, this would be a banger at Fright Fest though. Like this would be,
yeah.
I get what you're saying, because I definitely got that vibe as well, of kind of like, you know, it feels smaller because you have, you know, this one cast member primarily and stuff like that. This would be like one of the best we've seen.
Yeah, it would, but it'd be one of them where I'm like, oh yeah, we're just going to see this little sci-fi movie and take a chance on it. And then suddenly, you know, and we've had that a couple of times at Fright Fest where we've seen sci-fi and it's delivered.
Yeah, we've seen consistently some of the best sci-fi at Fright Fest.
Yeah, and it just really reminded me of that. And then, and yeah, like I say, I was surprised, like the fact that this is on, like, you know, front page of Disney Plus. I'm like, oh, okay, clearly this has got some money behind it. But when I did see the budget, I was like, wow. Like, visual effects are expensive, aren't they?
That's the thing, is like, it's got a sizable budget because it's like $23 million, which is big, but for a movie this soaked in special effects, which is, you know, there's at least 70 minutes on screen where it is like full CG, you know,
90% of the budget was in visual effects.
Yeah, and so like, to me, that's incredibly low based upon what we've seen of similar movies that require special effects. You know, even something like Cocaine Bear and stuff like had a way bigger budget, and like, let alone when you're getting into actual sci-fi big budget movies that require, you know, fully fleshed out characters made from nothing, which is what this is. To me, it's remarkable because I thought they wouldn't show as much as they did, but the fact that we're getting multiple aliens, multiple different aliens, things in the sky, like so much destruction in the house, so much destruction in an entire town, you know, which is clearly relying on visual effects over practical. Like, I think they did a miracle considering, like, I would have said it was easily double what it is. So I think it's kind of crazy that they did it on a relatively low budget for so many crazy special effects. But one thing I loved about this movie was the fact that it was just so fun. Like, I feel like we get into a habit of typically the films that we gravitate towards are either something that's like kind of, you know, the more serious, very elevated, very well constructed, you know, we're talking like the Robert Eggers movies and stuff like that, where it is just, it's world class, that everything they're doing on like a writing standpoint and acting and everything. And it doesn't actually matter what the genre is, you're just seeing something absolutely spectacular. And of course, that's a joy and something that has been missing this year. So there's those movies, or there is just like the, let's say, a more hardcore horror film, stuff that we gravitate towards because it has really adult themes, because it has consistent graphic violence and really interesting kills, you know, something like a Scream movie, which when you compare these two modern Scream movies to the original four, it's crazy how much more gory and bloody they are.
And
that's kind of just consistent with, in general, you just see a shit ton of violence in things these days. So to see this, which is completely devoid of, I'd say, both those things, it's just a fun thrill ride. And I can't really compare that to many things we've ever seen on that scale. Almost as like a Hardcore Henry is the only thing I can kind of think of, which is very different. But it is just like, oh, it's really, really fun. And that's not to strip away like the kind of craft of it, because I still think this is really well made. But I think it delivers more on that. And I think it shows you that you can get away with less is more, especially with the dialogue situation. Because, again, that's something that is super unique. Again, you know, we've covered like well north of 350 genre films for this podcast, and we've never seen anything like this. Like, we've not seen a feature-length film that just doesn't contain dialogue for the vast majority of it. And I think the fact that that's a weird, unique selling point that I thought would be like a crutch that it would rely on. Similar to certain movies, when you know they've got a lot of long takes, it becomes the thing that thing's known for. Whereas you completely forget it's even in here, because there's only one scene, in my opinion, in the whole film where it doesn't work. Where it's like, this makes no sense that no one's talking here. And it's almost like you just have to think you're watching like Mr. Bean or something, where people are just mute and everyone's emoting with mannerisms and noises rather than verbally, because that scene just doesn't work. Whereas everything else is like, yep, this all makes perfect sense. Like, why would she be saying like, oh, are you kidding me? You know, when like the alien emerges for the second time, like all these cheesy film tropes. This movie doesn't need that. Which I found to be something that was so enjoyable. And again, talking about tropes, like early on, you know, a shitter version of this film would have like a 20-minute subplot that was like an abusive boyfriend, you know, and like that's why she's kind of shunned herself away from the town, because she's recovering mentally. And obviously, of course, he turns up and he's the one that's kind of banging outside when you initially think it's a home invasion. And then at some point, like just as he then shows he's not a piece of shit for the first time, he gets offed by an alien. And like, that's what a lesser film would do. But this movie doesn't need that. It just relies on a really strong lead character doing the motions, like constantly doing interesting stuff, which again, we're kind of afraid to break down, but I want to hammer home that this is so much more than just a girl in a house. Like, this feels bigger. Like, there's so much going on where it really is like a pretty much an invasion on an entire, you know, town, more than just what's happening to her. And I think, like I say, they nail that early vibe of her smiling to someone who just completely ignores her. And I was completely with you. Like, I just love that it's a bit off, because it gives you that vibe of like, okay, is she the weird one or is everyone else the weird one? And that was clearly intentional.
The smile and the wave, I'm like, well, that's what an alien would do.
Exactly.
Like, oh, yeah, how do I smile and wave?
Yeah, and obviously that kind of juxtaposition, especially with where we end the film, is so genius, because I think that is intentional. And they are trying to put that in you of like, Bryn's the outsider here, which, yeah, we'll definitely talk about it. But I, you know, to keep it spoiler free for now, I loved the ending. You know, once we get past the info dump and we get back to the film, everything that transpires in the finale and the final moments just put a smile on my face, where I was like, if you'd have paused this movie at any time before this and said to me like, okay, how do you think this movie's going to end? I never would have guessed that. And again, how many times have we said it on this show, how predictable most genre movies are, even good ones. Like, even great ones, you can say, yeah, I kind of knew where it was going, but I was along for the ride. I had no idea where this was going, and I was still like having a blast.
That's the thing, when she left the police station and didn't go home, I was like, well, you know, I didn't expect to get that massive home invasion with an alien straight away, and then, yeah, expected to have more of a day-night sequence. You know, I think, do you wonder if John Goodman is hiding in a bunker somewhere in this town?
I hope so.
I could easily see that this is what was happening above 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yeah, this is weird. Like, it does almost feel like this could have been one of those, you know, Cloverfield universe movies in a different scenario.
Yeah. And I think the dialogue is I think it just shows that, like, we've spent a lot of time talking about it, and really the only time the lack of dialogue was mentioned was when I wanted to give it its nod in the synopsis, and then you bring it up way later into the conversation again, because like you said, it's not the gimmick. It's not like, oh yeah, this is fan footage, or this is Screen Life, or yeah, this is a giant one cut or whatever. It's like, no, it's just the movie, aside from one scene, there is no need for dialogue.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, the opening of the movie could have easily been her in her head reading the letter out loud to us, but we can read it, you know, and then, yeah, like, she's making noises and it's, you know, she, you know, reacting to things and showing terror and everything else. But I just think, you know, for a lead to be able to carry a movie for 90 minutes where she is on screen for that entire runtime without talking, but she managed to show us fully what the character is, all of the emotion, and keep us along for the journey for that long, really isn't a monumental achievement. You know, I think it really is a standout performance based off that.
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot of our lead in Last Night in Soho. The two actresses just were very similar to me, where they're not these, you know, conventional kind of, you know, scream queens that you're kind of like instantly, you know, if you'd have had these in like a lineup for a horror movie and been like, which one's the final girl, you might not be picking them. But then, like, as you get to develop them, their character just gets stronger and stronger, and their performance gets stronger and stronger. And I think, like I said, I was massively reminded of Last Night in Soho, just with the performance. And, you know, and I think when we mention all of these kind of movies that it's kind of reminding us of, it really shows that the level of movie that this is, that it is surrounded in kind of great comparison.
Yeah, it's just a fantastic movie. Know. Like, it's it feels weird because it's almost like it catches you off guard because we haven't seen one for so long. And then you start checking yourself going like, is it as good as I think it is? But it really just delivers on, like I say, for me, that it avoids obvious pitfalls that we keep seeing. It's why the conversations have been quite frustrating this year, because we keep having the same issues with films. And the fact that this avoids all of them in such simple ways, like say of pointless subplots, like that that Insidious movie, you know, that just had like a 20-minute subplot that it didn't need just to fill out the time, and or that movie The Boogeyman, where it was like, it's going to be 80 minutes of darkness showing you nothing, and maybe at the end we might show you something cool, but at that point I'd already mentally switched off. Whereas, like, it's the inverse of, like, no, you can just show the audience shit because there's more to show you anyway. But even if it wasn't, like, I was so on board with what they showed us early on, and I was almost spoiled for choice, where I was like, no, stop giving me so much cool shit. Like, you've done enough. And the fact that the movie was like, oh, just you wait. Like, you haven't even seen the tip of the iceberg yet. And I was like, I'm satisfied. Like, I don't need anything else. So it works on that level. And then, like I say, with that gimmick of the no dialogue, which is fascinating, and again, something that we have not even remotely seen anything like it, lesser films would be like, right, we need to shoehorn this in. We need it to make narrative sense. You know, like, this movie would be called Don't Speak, and it would be because the aliens are actually blind and they track you or based on sound. So of course, you know, the best character for this would be the loner who doesn't need it to speak to anyone.
And she is actually a mute as well. Because, you know, exactly. Our character's not a mute.
No.
She just has no one to talk to.
Exactly. Like, God, it's just, it really shows you that, like, you can just keep it simple and just nail the simple shit. And that's why I love this film, is because they go, yeah, all that other shit is irrelevant. Like, we're just going to make a fun, awesome alien film. And you want that? I'm like, yeah, I do want that, actually. Like, I really didn't want to evoke it, but it's funny after, like, Nope last year and kind of so much potential that to me wasn't realized. And I really, I have to watch that movie again at some point. I just can't bring myself to it.
I feel like I just watched Nope.
Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, you could have just made a fun alien movie. But then we've seen so many attempts at it, and again that's why it's like, I don't think I'm giving this enough credit, even though I don't think it's a diss, but just to say, like, this is really fun, because we've seen so many movies that would strive to be that failed to deliver that. And like, sometimes that's enough of, like, it doesn't need to be some groundbreaking, like, every screenshot is a piece of art I'd put on my wall, like The Lighthouse, or similarly, it doesn't need to have, like, some of the most crazy violence I've ever seen, like Lords of Chaos, that I'm, like, still traumatized about 5 years later. Like, it's fine to not have those things in a horror film. You can just deliver an awesome film, and that's fine.
It reminds me of something like Jeepers Creepers back in the day.
Yeah.
When it's like, yeah, it's not like a ton of kills and crazy gore. It's just this awesome road cat and mouse for like 90 minutes.
Yeah, at one point I was thinking this is like a gateway horror, where I was like, oh yeah, this almost does toe that line between, like, you watch a Goosebumps, then you'd gravitate towards something like this before watching, like, you know, something more hard. But like, it's probably too much for that, because it's really tense. Like, some of the scenes, and there's one bit when they do such a good misdirection with an alien that appears at a time when I wasn't expecting. It's not even like a jump scare, because again, it could have been a jump scare in this scene.
Yeah.
But no, there's no loud, annoying volume cue. It's just the alien's there when you're not expecting it, and holy shit, that got me. And that was awesome. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, there's just so many cool moments. But yeah, I definitely think we should talk about spoilers, because I think this movie deserves it. But obviously before that, recommendations. And yeah, my recommendation would be to definitely watch this before we spoil it, because for me, this was an absolute joy. The fact that it is just available on a streaming service, that, you know, if you've got a family, you probably already got Disney Plus. If you're a Star Wars fan, you probably got it right now. And like, it's, you know, it's there ready to go. And it's, for me, it was just a joy. It's the perfect runtime. None of it overstays its welcome. It has such a fun finale that I didn't see coming. And yeah, it was just a blast. This was a joy. Like, this is what we want more of. It's a shame movies like this are so rare. Because I feel like this is the type of movie that we'd have to fill in between the big tentpole movies. Of like, of course we look forward to like Edgar Wright and Mike Flanagan, but then you would get these that just come out of nowhere and wow you. And we've been, you know, we need more of these types of films, basically. We haven't had enough of these this year. So this is one of them. Just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah, definitely. I completely agree. I think the fact that this is on such a huge streaming platform is fantastic. And the fact that it's just come out of nowhere, I think it is one that, yeah, you've already heard enough if you've got this far. So just pause it and watch the movie. And then I think that's the thing, that this is a great movie that everyone should watch. But also, I think it is a really fun conversation to have around the ending, because I think it is such a well-crafted ending that did just leave it open to interpretation to a point. So yeah, I think just all round, you can't go wrong with this one.
Definitely. So yeah, final warning, full spoiler alert on this wonderful film. But yeah, it's interesting. Like, I'll tee it up to you to talk about the ending, because when we get the initial reveal of humans basically with the parasite inside them, which is very kind of Resident Evil, the way it looks, you know, the parasite in the neck visually, you know, so like Resident Evil 4, which is great. But again, it's something that we don't typically see with alien stuff, you know, that's normally like a different type of film if you're going for like a parasite or a virus type vibe. So it's a cool take, but it wasn't initially to me as interesting. Like, I preferred just the normal aliens that we're getting, and because we were getting such different variants each time, it was so fascinating to me that when it was like that scene on the bus was awesome, because like the way it's set up, and it's like, oh, this is shifty dude getting close to this young or vulnerable girl, like, again, they're playing into something that you're aware of, but again, they spin it in an interesting way that I didn't see coming, where it's like, no, it's not a creepy dude, or it's not a dude trying to help her who's actually a nice guy. It's just a fucking alien. But it's actually, you know, inside a human. So that was such a cool twist. But after that, I was like, yeah, I kind of just want normal aliens. But then that gets us to the finale, which I think earns it. But what did you make, I guess, of the parasites rather than just the normal aliens we were getting?
Yeah, I really like them. I think it was a cool kind of take. And I think especially when you have like this, you know, with an alien invasion movie, often you have it. So, you know, the aliens are trying to take over in some way. And, you know, there's these, you know, we get alien probes and all these different things and how they're going to colonize on the planet and all these different things. And I like the idea of this parasite that they kind of put in you. Like you say, it feels like a different movie, where it would just be more of this infection parasite movie. So I like that we had that, but then we had the aliens running around. I just think it gave us a lot of everything at that point. Like you said, we've not just got one type of alien.
Mm-hmm.
We've got multiple types of alien, and we have these parasites. So then we have these humans that have got it in them. We've got the parasites trying to get in our lead character. So there's just so much going on. And I think almost all of it works for me.
Mm. The fact that even like the aliens using telekinesis like early on in that initial fight was super cool. You know, I again, it's something that I'm sure has been used, but it's not overused. And so that was an interesting element of like, you know, because it does evoke that tractor beam, which they use a lot. And that's something that's such a cool element in this whole film. But like that would be something that it feels natural, because especially when you think about aliens in films, like, especially if you're going to go for that classic alien look, if you're not going to go for a more, you know, like the aliens from the movie Alien, for example, where like they have obvious threats to humans. These things, again, unless you get into like the giant praying mantis / spider creature, which obviously could just wreck anyone, like that first little, especially the second one, I guess, that she finds, because that's kind of like the small one, which has one of the most brutal kills in the whole film. When she just like slams it into the cupboard and smacks its head, I was like, Jesus. Like, that was when I was like, oh, yeah, this isn't gateway horror, because this is dark.
Yeah. Even though it got to a point where, like, because the first kill of the alien, I was like, oh, shit. Was that trying to kill her?
Yeah.
You know? Because I know it did fling her across the room, and also it destroyed her model city, which very much upset me. She worked so hard on that goddamn city. Like, I would have been way more devastated if I was her. Like, I wouldn't have gone into town. I'd have been trying to rebuild. Yeah, when she actually killed it, I was like, oh, shit. Like, obviously it wasn't, like, you know, it was aggressive and invaded her home. But I was a bit like, oh, man, did she fuck up? Like, you know, and then, like, with the little one, that was, again, aggressive. But she'd killed one of them at that point. And then when she kind of, like, wrecked it, I was like, shit, are we going to get, like, three or four dead aliens down and then realize like these guys are trying to help her from the village or something? Do you know what I mean? Like, because I just didn't trust the villagers at all, because at this point we just didn't know why they had exiled her. So yeah, like there was just loads of things like that were going on in my mind, and yeah, when we got to the kind of finale and we got to kind of, you know, the scene revealing how she'd killed her kind of best friend, and that's the reason why she was being kind of exiled. And then kind of when she gets just dropped back down, and I'm like, what just happened? Like, you know, we've had this whole movie where they're chasing her and then they've just dropped her from the sky. And then, like, it cuts to the final scenes of her just in this world with all of these neck alien humans, you know, just living in bliss for her. I was like, oh shit, like they sympathize with her, and they realize that like they're outsiders that no one wants to accept, and they're trying to make their way in this world by you know, taking over our bodies and turning us into neck monsters. But still, you know, they're aliens, and she's an alien as well, so they've just let her live in their world. And they're like, you know what? She's just going to stay in her farmhouse. She ain't going to try to amass survivors and come after us. She's just going to chill, and we're going to just let her chill. And we're going to go off and do our thing and leave a few people with her so she's happy. And we want her to be happy because we sympathize what she's gone through. And I love that as like the message that I took away from the movie.
Mm. Yeah, it was really interesting. Like getting to the reveal of kind of what happened to her and her friend, it was interesting because they do all the setup, and so you're like really wanting to know. Then you kind of forget about it because you're just getting this fun thrill ride. So then when we circle back to it, and it's kind of like they go into her memories, and we're seeing these things play out. Which, like, visually, this whole part of the movie was so like a video game. You know, the fact that you're going into these specific things and walking around, and it's like, especially because the scene would freeze until it was like ready to play for you. Like, it was so interesting. I was like, this sort of visual storytelling, I feel like we just wouldn't have had without video games before.
Oh, 100%. This is such like a waiting for the scene to load.
Yeah, it was just like interesting the way she was interacting, but, getting to that reveal, because again, like, you kind of assume, like, okay, well, you know the person's dead because you see their grave, and she's kind of saying, like, I'm sorry. So you're like, okay, she's like inadvertently caused this girl's death, which is why everyone hates her. And I was like, I don't want to say mildly disappointed, but it was not great for what it could have been. It was just like, oh, I guess they had what, somewhat of an argument, and then when she pushes her over, she just takes it too far and like smacks her in the head with a rock, which it just felt a bit too much. It would have, even a slight variant would have just been like she pushed her over and she hit her head on a rock, felt like it would have been more valid, because that would have been like a genuine accident which wouldn't have been deserving of the treatment that she got. But seeing it was like, man, that was, I get that you're a kid, so that's what you really have to think about, but it's such a fucking dumb thing to do, to like, oh, I'm a bit angry, I'm gonna pick up this giant rock and smash you over the face with it. That's like crazy to me. I don't know, is that how you felt?
No.
Right, no. It's just kind of like, it's kids, they wouldn't understand what would happen.
I think that's it, where it's, and also just this, you know, she did something horrific, and I think the fact that it wasn't an accident, that she is unequivocally to blame for this death.
Yeah, definitely.
So people have a right to be angry with her, but is she a bad person? Did she, you know, was it just this one moment of madness that now she is being punished by everyone in her world for the rest of her life for, you know? And I think that's the thing that makes it an interesting morality decision. Whereas if it had been, yeah, they were, you know, swimming and one of them drowned accidentally, or yeah, you know, she accidentally, you know, was driving the car and
I thought it was just gonna like, be a car accident.
Yeah. You know, and I just think they're so vanilla and so like, you know, people are then being villainized when they really are the victim in the tragedy as well. They're just the surviving victim.
Yeah.
Whereas she isn't the surviving victim. She is a murderer.
Yeah.
But is she a cold-blooded murderer, or is she someone that just saw red and made a huge mistake? And I do think as well, like, children, and especially at that age, it's a weird age because you do have strength and power, but you don't have the, you know, the fear of death and the knowingness of consequence and all of this stuff. And so it's a really coming of age time when stuff like that can happen. You know, I know stories of, you know, people at high school that like lost an eye because, you know, they a stupid accident in the playground, you know, and it's like, man, what a stupid way to lose your sight because of, you know, just like kids in a playground throwing a stone or something. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, but that happens,
yeah,
you know, and it's a fear that I've like had as a parent where I'm like, oh God, I just hope these dumb kids don't go and do something dumb like when they're playing, you know, because they aren't aware of that, like, our body's precious and fragile. And so, yeah, I just kind of saw all of that combined with the fact that it is interesting that she did make the mistake. You know, she deserves some of the hate she's getting. You know, people should have been angry with her, but should she have been exiled her entire life? You know, some people would say yes. You know, and could you argue against someone saying yes after we just saw what she did?
Yeah,
you know, and I think that's just what gives it so many layers for me.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. Like, I think that is such an interesting dynamic of the movie, and why I think why we get to then the ending, you know, of after getting the reveal, and like, this is when I loved everything that happened, and it kind of makes even more sense now after what you've said of, like, I think this is what the aliens saw, you know, like, they saw it, they felt it, and I think they made the decision of, like, we're still going to go ahead with our plan, but she's different, you know, she's not like everyone else in this town. And so when you're getting to that finale, and it's just such an interesting visual of kind of her dancing around with these people. When she first interacts with the people, doesn't she, outside, and like waves, and they all wave back in unison. And then you see kind of like the wriggling, you know, parasite in their neck, and you're like, oh damn, like everyone now is, it's the inverse of the intro. With her just doing, I love the fact that just a wild thrill ride of a film ends with like a song and dance number. Again, I just didn't see it coming, and so it put a smile on my face. And the second it then cut to like a more horror style ending with the title of like "No One Will Save You," I was just like, man, this just works. Like, they just know what they're doing with this ending. It was so cool. Did you like the actual final few moments?
Yeah, well, I think, like you say, I think I love the juxtaposition from the opening scenes of her dancing in the house alone and it being so sad, and the fact that she is so alienated from the village, from the town, and then we get to the final scene when the entire town are actual aliens and she's no longer alienated. And she is embracing the aliens and having a great time. And the fact that, like, she's even, like, there's like this hint of like romance. It's not even like, you know, that, like, you know, she's kind of being flirtatious with one of them. And it's just like, yeah, there's just a whole different Bryn from what we had for the rest of the movie. And I think that's great, you know? And so, yeah, I really enjoyed the final images. And I just think like I love it when credits roll of a movie and I have a smile on my face.
Yeah.
You know, and the song, and especially if it's tethered to a song, and then that song is playing in during the credits, because I just sit and I'm just listening to the song, smiling, thinking of the final images of the movie, and like I love it when that happens, and yeah, it happened with this one.
I'm so glad as well with Disney Plus, they let it sit, because with Netflix, they're so aggressive that the second something finishes, you get basically 3 seconds before it's going to autoplay something. Whereas the fact that with this, like, it played a considerable amount of the credits, and then it was like, it popped up saying, would you want to watch Barbarian? But it didn't have like an instant, you know, countdown ready to go. It was just like, ah, you might like this as well. And it's like, yeah, you guys know, like, this movie's awesome. But I love that. They're like, yeah, in those moments, hearing that song playing over the credits, I was totally with you of like, I had a smile on my face. I was like, I can't believe how much this movie landed. It's just this random little thing that just came out of nowhere, and it was like, oh yeah, it's kind of like sci-fi, maybe we should check it out. And man, I've just been dying for a movie like this for so long. It's such a joy. But yeah, it was a very fun time to talk about as well. So it's one of those movies you don't want to let go, really. It's just like, man, this is, we got one, we finally got a win. Yes.
No, and I think that's the thing, that like momentum has been tough for lately. And like, you know, going into the, you know, the next few weeks, which we've got some really big releases that we're looking forward to, I was less excited than what I should have been, just because we've got no momentum going into it. And just like watching a movie like this that was so enjoyable, I feel like energized and pumped to be like, oh yeah, shit, like, we're seeing some movies that we're really excited for, and just seeing this banger, like, it's just a good place to springboard from, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, I couldn't agree more with that. But yeah, that was our discussion of No One Will Save You. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. So yeah, like you mentioned, we have plenty to look forward to, in fact, in the month of October. Of course, we get VHS, the return of, we get the final Mike Flanagan collaboration on Netflix. That looks great.
I'm so excited for that, man.
I know, I am as well. I'm like, I've avoided everything. So aside from when we first spoke about it, you know, like, I don't watch trailers anymore, and I've kind of like, I vaguely remember a couple of the names who's in it, but I don't know if like the full cast of Flanagan actors is in it. So, man, yeah, the second that's out, I cannot, that's like the thing I'm probably the most looking forward to. Because it just feels good for him to finally be back. And of course, yeah, we've got the big one, as well as other films as well. The Exorcist, Five Nights at Freddy's, like some decent trailers for those ones. Yeah, the big one, the return of Saw X, the 10th installment. You know, I think we can all say that there was 6 bangers and 3 misses in a row. So can they turn it round with this 10th installment? I mean, great trailer. Right. Sounds good on paper, doesn't it? Looks good, certainly, in the trailer, but we have been tricked with that before. But how you feeling going into the 10th Saw? Do you think they're finally going to do it for us?
Yeah.
It's difficult, right? Because
in the bag, isn't it?
We don't want to go all in, because I've made that mistake before. But I'm excited. Like, and it won't hurt me like in the past, because I've been so convinced it's going to be excellent and be like, oh, they're really going to explain, you know, what happened to this character. I'm not in that mindset right now. I just think, want a fun Saw film, which I think this will be.
But I think that's what it's selling itself as, which is what's exciting. It's just like, yeah, we're not going to try to create this legacy or this cult or anything else. We're just going to find 24 hours of Jigsaw's Life as a Killer that we haven't already put on screen and turn that into a movie. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I love Jigsaw. I love him, like, doing traps and killing people. And we've not had that for multiple movies at this point. So if that's the crux of it, great. And like, I don't want any time jumps. I don't want to see anything beyond just this little bit. And it's like, yeah, we know where the characters go post this movie. Like, you know, because I think that's the thing where, like, you know, people have always had that with like M. Night for years, that like, oh, M. Night movies got to have a twist. And it's like, oh, do they have to? Like, can he not just make a really good movie, and can we not enjoy it? Like, and can we not just enjoy him for being a good filmmaker that does often have a twist in it, you know? But like, we don't, you know, with Quentin Tarantino, we don't say, oh yeah, you've always got to make Reservoir Dogs, you know? And it's just like, with Saw, it became such a thing where it was like, oh, the Saw film has to have a twist at the end.
Yeah,
he's got to have a big reveal at the end. And I'm like, do you know what, I just want Jigsaw to like wreck people for like 90 minutes and then the film ends. Like, I really just don't want them to do any other shit. Like, we know who all these people are at this point. If they introduce another killer, it's just tragic. Like, just give me these two doing shit. And if you're going to give me a reveal and give me, like, you know, a little segue into another movie or anything like that that we already know about, but don't give me new plot in this very already overloaded timeline.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, because like, I love M. Night and I love Saw, but I've never equated that to why I love them, of like, no, oh, they have to have this reveal. It's Saw is so weird, because like I say, because that first movie had this one iconic moment with the music reveal, it then was suddenly like, they all have to have a similar iconic moment with the same music reveal. And that's, it's like, I almost put that in the back of my, like, I forget that that's a thing, but they do that. And it's weird, because like, sometimes it's cool, you know, certainly when Saw was at its best in those early sequels, like 2 and 3. But then when you just get to like, oh yeah, the twist is you all could have lived or something. Like, I think that's one of the twists of the films, isn't it? Of like, you think it's, I think it's like, is it 5 when it's the 5 people, or it might be 6? But yeah, it's like,
all work together from the start.
Yeah, exactly. There was like a way for you all to survive if you weren't selfish or whatever. And it's like, that's cool, I guess. But like, you're really stretching if you consider that to be like a twist. But then they, yeah, like I say, the recent crutch has just been, you know, okay, now Dr. Lawrence Gordon is a bad guy. And like, and you know, and those 2 later films, it's just, it becomes painful. Like, oh, it's another apprentice that was working with him up until his death. And Yeah, I really hope they don't fall into these traps. It'd be so easy for them to do that, and I still expect it, to be honest, in terms of, like, I think there's a high chance I'll really like everything about this film other than the ending, because I do think they're going to do some
bullshit
at the end. I just expect it, of like, they'll just completely do something that is completely out of pocket with either John Kramer as a character or Amanda as a character that makes no sense, and it'll annoy me, but I'm just already going to, you know, deal with that.
You know what I hope they do? Do you know what I hope the twist is?
Go on. I love is when it, we try just... and come up with the worst thing possible.
The twist is that he didn't die in Saw 3.
I knew he was going to say that. Like, the second you said the twist is, I figured it out. I was like, I know what you're going to say. Because it's the worst thing you could come up with.
Because it's the worst thing you can come up with, but fuck it. Because at least at that point, we're like, cool, Jigsaw's alive. Job done.
So what is it? Is it like his twin brother? Like, what's the bullshit reason? Yeah.
It's just John Kramer.
It's so dumb. Like, it's so bad. But yeah, as long as they avoid that, like we said a few weeks back that, you know, Tobin Bell as this character is on like the Mount Rushmore for horror characters, and it's kind of, it's 100% valid, but most of the films he's not in them that much, you know, like when you get into the sequels, like he's in Saw a bit, and like Free he's really at death's door when he actually dies, but then you obviously get a few of the backstories when you get like Jill, and especially the one where like
two. You know,
yeah, you get two, but then there's the one with the backstory about him being screwed out of his medical insurance. Yeah. I think it's six. That's really good with Tobin Bell. And so the promise of what we're seeing with this one could potentially be the most he's ever been on screen in a Saw film. And you may say to yourself, well, you know, that was a long time ago, but his. I know it was just a cameo, but his cameo in Jigsaw showed, because that was arguably one of his greatest moments in the franchise, in a very poor film, and he was amazing. Like, he was so good in that scene.
I think the worry is that, because obviously, you know, Tobin Bell isn't a spring chicken anymore, but John Kramer isn't for Indiana Jones. Do you know what I mean? Like, Harrison Ford playing Indiana Jones in 2023... is a stretch. Tobin Bell playing John Kramer isn't, because he's not going to be, you know, deadlifting like dudes into the back of a van.
No, he never did.
He's got muscle for that. Exactly. Yeah, never did. And so now he's still not going to be. Yeah. He outsmarted people with his wit and brain and cunningness to come up with these traps. And so, you know, that's what he's going to do, hopefully, in this movie.
Yeah, like, as long as his face and voice still works, which, judging by the trailers, they absolutely are. Good. Like, yeah, it's going to be a banger. So, yeah, looking forward to it, man. It's so close. It's wild to think that that's the next thing we're talking about. Like,
I know.
Crazy, man. Like, God, we've been on such an adventure with Saw, like, so many of these franchises. And, like,
I know.
I'm getting like some form of either flashbacks and romanticism, but also PTSD of like, man, it was really fun talking about those old films except for Seven, and then just these recent ones have just been like pain.
I feel like we could walk into the cinema and you just start to have like a panic attack because everything hits you.
Last time it really did, and like I said, I don't think I'm at that point anymore, because I haven't got giddy with like, I've watched the trailer 10 billion times. Like, it's, you know, I've gone into this more of like a normal human being, which is probably a good way to treat films. But
I like it.
No, it's probably not as entertaining, but you know, sorry. But we'll talk about that next week. It's gonna be it's gonna be good. And like I say, all this other shit, man, we've got the TV, we'll get to talk about Creepshow soon. Little bit of Chucky, the half a Chucky, just a small portion of Chucky coming this year.
That's really soured my excitement for Chucky.
Yeah, I'm not same. Lie. I know. Yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, 4 episodes, great. But yeah, who knows? Maybe you'll check out a bit of American Horror Story as well.
You never know.
Yeah, we shall see on that one. There's so much to talk about in Halloween, like always, which is great. But yeah, that was episode 364. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. Mainly because I never could. How could I start that?